This is Life Elsewhere, created and hosted by Norman B.
Hello there. Welcome to Life Elsewhere. I'm Norman B. A very special edition for you. I have a worldwide exclusive, the premiere of the title cut from David Jay's forthcoming double album, Missive to an Angel from the Halls of Infamy and Allure. Now, this is going to be my second in-depth conversation with the former bass player of Bauhaus and Love and Rockets. And David, I should let you know, doesn't do that many long interviews. Plus, he's always traveling, so I was very fortunate to be able to spend time chatting with the man whose music I greatly admire. His new double album is exceptionally good. In the next 60 minutes, you're going to hear tracks from the album, and David, he's going to give us some insights about its making and the all-star lineup of the guests involved. So to begin, this track, Baudelaire, and then my exclusive in-depth conversation with Mr. David Jay.
She was walking and talking as usual out on the floor, while Ruby was deep into her pantomime. Me, I just stood staring at my reflection in a glass of bourbon over by the door. Still couldn't find those friends of mine. But Ruby turned and pirouetted like a ghost dancing on the marble stairs. And I felt myself set free in a city without weather. My own dream of Baudelaire. She leans so close to you and whispers, and you will see diamonds falling all around her mouth. Ah, but Ruby moves her lemon-scented body just like the breezes from the south. So somehow I got tangled, all tangled in her long red hair. And I woke up to the taste of danger, feeling such a lad like Baudelaire. Thank you. Here comes an actor to fill my glass just one more time. Well, all the lovely ladies, they get up and they adjourn to see the show. My head is so anointed with the blood and the wine that I almost seem to know. Of all the secrets down on the holy street, where the vagrants, they come and they go. And the secrets in the eyes of cats and other vagrant lovers, where the cruel waters flow. But Ruby seemed to know the secrets old as the ages. All the blood and the wine flowing in the fountains in the city streets. And I crawl to her to be drowned and driven, feeling such a lot like Baudelaire. With the vanity of Baudelaire, such a lot like Baudelaire.
This track is called Baudelaire, and this is from our good friend David J from his upcoming album Missive to an Angel from the Halls of Infamy and Allure. Wouldn't you know it, David's back with us via the wonders of Skype. David J, welcome back to Life Elsewhere.
Hello, thank you very much.
It's nice to speak with you again. You're a very busy man. I keep seeing that every time I see you or see your name mentioned, it seems like you're in a different city, a different continent. You seem like you've been all over the place recently.
Yeah, I'm about to head off back to Europe again, going back to Prague, which is where I recorded most of the album. The track you just played, that Baudelaire track, was recorded in Prague. Great studios, great musicians, and two of the musicians that played on the album are going to be accompanying me on the tour. So looking forward to that, going right across Europe and then the UK.
I'm just looking down your tour dates here, and it seems to me, and tell me if I'm right about this, but it seems like you hardly get a day off in the month of August. I'm looking at here, and you're in Prague, you're in Berlin, you're in Cologne, Rome, Lisbon, Spain, you're in Barcelona, Madrid, Paris, Manchester, London. It just goes on and goes on. Do you get time to breathe, David? Yeah. How does that work for you?
I try to meditate every morning.
Yeah.
And that really helps.
Yes.
It really does. And, just breathe slowly.
Yes.
And, can I just say something about the track you just played?
Absolutely. Yeah, I want to get into that. Absolutely. Sure, of course.
It's the only cover on the album. It's by Peter Lofner.
Why?
Who I just discovered when I played a house show. I've been playing on the living room circuit for several years now.
Yeah.
And I played one in a backyard in Santa Fe. And there was a local DJ there who came up to me after the gig. And he said that my songs and my delivery reminded him of Peter Lofner.
Uh-huh.
And the name wasn't familiar to me until he told me that he was the original guitarist in Perubu, and Perubu I love.
Right, yes.
And in fact, I think I may have seen Peter Lofner when he was in Perubu, because I saw them when they played the first gig at the Marquee.
Yes.
In the mid-70s. Anyway, he was a bit of a tragic figure, because he died when he was 23.
Right.
But he was very influential. He was also an early member of Television. And he was really ahead of his time and a great songwriter, as is evident by his song Baudelaire. And I had it in mind to record something of his. Actually, this DJ, he suggested that I record a song called Cinderella Backstreet. So that night, the night of the gig, when I met him, I went back and I checked that song out and I loved it. And I fell down this Lofner rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And I haven't come out, really. And I just picked up this wonderful box set that's just come out, which is but everything he ever recorded. And it's a revelation, you know, because he was so talented.
Yes.
But the one I really connected with was the Baudelaire song. And then I tried to get a handle on it, but I couldn't. And this was in the days leading up to the sessions in Prague. And I just couldn't get inside of the song. And I didn't want to do it like the original. So when it came to record it, I just said, let's just dive in and see what happens. And the way it came out, that's the first take. And I'd never sung it like that before. And it was as if I really felt like I was channeling something. And it just came out. I got some of the words wrong, but
yeah,
I didn't want to do it again because it just felt like I was inside the song and sort of in this sort of state of reverie, really. And it's one of my favorite tracks on the album. So, yeah, Peter Lofner.
Thank you so much for sharing that information about that and the story, David. I think it's so pertinent for the listeners to understand that. And I have to tell you, when I first heard that, it to me, I had to look and see whether you'd written it because it does sound like something that you would have written, but there's almost an ethereal quality to it, which I love, which is really, really, it's very powerful, as you say. Did Peter Lofner also play in Red Crayola? Was he in that band as well?
No, he was in Rocket from the Crypt.
Ah, yes.
Which was the precursor to Perubo.
Right, yes, yeah. Great stuff, terrific stuff, which of course leads me to talk about the actual album itself. And once again, I want to give my listeners the title, Missive to an Angel from the Halls of Infamy and Allure. Long title, David. Lots of things we can make from that. Talk to me about that title.
Well, it's descriptive of a period of time, the last 5 years in my life and a journey that I've been on, traversing those halls of infamy and allure.
Yeah.
And the missive, I mean, the whole thing, the whole double album is a kind of letter.
Yes.
It's a love letter of sorts, and it's dedicated to my wife.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's all there in the album, in the lyrics, and I don't really want to expand on it beyond what I just said.
Okay, no, that's fine. I just would like to know if you think, David J, that this is probably one of your more personal works.
It's the most personal.
Yes.
Probably the most personal I've made, yeah.
Yeah, I think the last time we spoke, I think you said that it was going to be, and it really does come across like that. When's it going to be out, David?
October the 18th.
Oh, okay, so we're almost there then. Yeah, yeah. There's lots of very interesting people playing on this album and accompanying you. Give us a little sort of, I did a little overview who's on the album and just some of the things that have been going on to put this together.
Well, the violinist in Prague is one of the best in the world, Karel Hullas. And it was his studio where I did most of the recording. And he's a fantastic player. And he'll be joining me for some of the dates in Europe, including the UK dates.
Yeah.
And aside from him, we have Anton Newcomb.
Yes.
From Brian Jonestown Massacre, who I recorded with in Berlin. We've been talking for years about collaborating. And I finally found myself in Berlin, and it was the time, and he was there, and we just spontaneously cooked something up in his studio. And then when we laid down an instrumental track, I had the idea of having Azia Argento do a spoken word on it. And we called her up. She was in New York. She was sick in bed with a cold. So her lovely, sexy voice sounded even huskier.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
And I gave a very, very simple direction. I just said, Azia, write something about a red rose and then write something about a yellow rose and then recite it in Italian down your phone and send us a recording. And she instantly did this.
Yeah.
So it came back within 15 minutes and it was perfect.
Yeah.
The red and the yellow rose is very integral to the lyric. It's a song called My Gaina and the Frozen Roses.
Yes.
And it was quite uncanny because she, although she hadn't heard my lyric, it was very complimentary and almost, a bit uncanny because it really tied in with the story of the lyric. And so we just flew that in the studio and Anton just sort of did a little bit of nudging so that it sat right in the track and it was done.
Yeah, it's terrific. It's a terrific track. Shall we play that? And then when we come back from playing it, there's a story how you come to write that. And I'd like you to tell my listeners about that. So we're going to play Megania and the Frozen Roses. This is David J with Azar Argento on Life Elsewhere. If you're just joining us, my guest is David J, and it's just wonderful to speak to him again. Megania and the Frozen Roses there. There's a quite a wonderful story that goes along with how you began to write that piece. Can you talk about that, David?
Sure, yeah. Well, I met Megania in Turin, and she came to my gig. I played a solo gig. And we got chatting afterwards, and I invited her out to dinner the next night. So we met up for dinner. And after we had a lovely dinner and we were having a good conversation, a kind of playful, good-natured, barbed conversation.
Yeah.
It was all fun. And then we went for a cocktail in the plaza. And we were approached by this guy selling these very sad-looking wilted roses that obviously just come out of the icebox.
Yeah.
And he was a bit annoying. But anyway, I bought he had a bunch of four roses and I bought them and gave them to pass them to Margena. And so that it becomes a motif in the song. And I allude to the symbolism of the colors of the roses, and it all ties into the story. I was kind of falling in love with this girl.
Yes, yeah, of course.
But it was, but it was unrequited.
Yes,
and you know, we just had a lovely evening, and she went on her way, and that was the last time I ever saw her. And so it's a poignancy to it all, and I wrote the lyric on the plane from Turin to Berlin the next day. And the following day, I went in and recorded the song. So it was very immediate.
And then when you got into the studio with Anton, what did he have to say about it? Well, how did that work with him?
Well, as far as using the lyric, we laid down the instrumental track. And how we did that was I had a chord sequence that I came up with the night before. I was staying in the studio, and I came up with this sequence, and I said, I've got something here. And I played it to him and said, oh, okay, let me put a beat together. So he very quickly gets a beat going, drum machine. And then I laid down the basic rhythm chord sequence. And then he was just full of ideas, keyboards, strings, you know, samples, percussion. Just everything he tried worked. And very quick, you know, and he just, at one point, he set up a cymbal and he hit it and reversed the tape, as it were, and it was backwards, and it just sort of hit right, so it's like a percussive thing, but he like timed that in his head.
Yeah,
it was very impressive. And then I just did this I'd been toying with this effects pedal that was very sort of extreme, sort of outlandish, weird looping device, and I used that and a couple of layers of that over the top to make this noise element, and then it was basically done. And then Anton said, have you got any poetry that you could recite, anything maybe surrealistic or just some spoken word? And I said, yeah, I wrote this thing on the plane, let me go and get it. Yeah. So that's how it came about.
You like experimenting, don't you?
Yeah, and I like just sort of free form, and just I like accidents, actually, you know. I relish when things go wrong, because I quite often perceive that as a gift. It makes you sort of adjust your perspective and see, oh, well, that could be perceived as a mistake, whatever it is, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's something we could employ, and maybe this could be a bit of magic, you know, and it very often is.
Yes. You know, I've been reading reports about the shows that you've been doing with Peter Murphy across the States with the Bauhaus, 40 years, was it? So it's sort of anniversary.
Yes, the Ruby tour, yes.
Yeah, and I'm just, you're talking about mistakes, or you're talking about sort of the spontaneity. And some of the reports I've been getting about the performances that you and Peter have been doing have been very spontaneous. The spontaneity has been coming through, and everybody's been saying just how wonderful it was. Any thoughts about that?
It's a set, you
yes,
know, it's
yeah.
a, it's not like we're just improvising, but
right.
there are certain sections in the songs where we do improvise. And so the four of us, you know, can just go off, and then we have a cue to bring us back in.
Yeah.
And that was something that we did in the original band. We love that because it just frees everything up, you know, and it's exciting and it keeps it fresh for you and for the audience. So, yeah, we've always done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's get back to you and this terrific album, this double album of yours. We've talked about a couple of tracks on it, and one of the big standouts for me are the other people that you're working with that you've managed to get together. Just a lot of just terrific talent, including actresses. And there's another one that know which one I'm going to talk about, and it's The Auteur with Rose McGowan. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, again, it's one of those things where Rose and I had been talking about doing something together for a long time. And, our connection goes way back to the film The Doom Generation, which was, I believe it's our first movie, and they used a Love and Rockets song in the soundtrack.
Oh yes,
I think it was Body and Soul.
Yes,
and so way back. we met up in LA a few years ago, and we just, you know, she wanted to get back into doing music, and then I said, you know, well, maybe you could do something with me. And so I had this, it's an old song, The Otter, and I wanted to rework it because it seemed very pertinent with the whole Me Too thing.
Right.
I thought, well, that's ideal for Rose to be involved in. And, you know, maybe she could even sing it. So I sent her the original, and she really loved it, and she wanted to do her own version. In fact, she has, although she's such a perfectionist, she's still tweaking it. I don't know if it'll ever come out, but it's wonderful. And there's a few different versions that she's done, but she wants to make it very minimal.
Yes.
And so that's up to her. But I, while she was doing that, I got her to record spoken word at the end. And she just did that down her phone and on her own. I wasn't with her at the time.
Yeah.
And then I did my part at the end as a sort of response to hers, and I think it works very well.
Yes, it does.
And the music underneath, the eerie string section, is taken from the strings that are on the main body of the song, and I reversed it. I reversed those strings and put a load of reverb on and made it very sort of subdued and slowed it down a bit, and it's very ominous, I think, when it creeps in at the end there. So I just tweaked the lyrics a little bit, and that's the story behind that one. I really hope Rose's version does come out, because it's very good. She's got a really good voice.
She does, you're right.
I liked her voice.
Yes, yes. Well, as we've talked about it, David, let's play it. This is David J with Rose McGowan and The Auteur. This is Life Elsewhere.
Take you under his wing on the seat of a velvet divan. He's gonna make you into a star in the back of a black stretch sedan. He's gonna change you, put you in red, cultivate your pearl. He's gonna see you climb all the way to goddess from Galisto's girl. He's the altar, the matchless Bengali, the altar, king of the party, the altar. No looking back. When you tasted the sugar of Malak and you sung to the gods a sweet smack, he's gonna land you in heaven, your secret armor charms. He's gonna lay you down in the mine with the goldest from your heart. He is the altar, the matchless Bengali, the altar, the king of the body, the altar. And girl, do you have a head? cheek. Gonna make you. Gonna change you. Gonna cease the altar. Gonna bless you. The altar. The altar
completes you.
The altar
commands you.
The altar
needs you.
The altar
will grab you.
The altar
commands you.
The altar
completes you.
The altar
will use you.
The altar
commands you.
The altar
will leave you.
The altar
they use you.
The altar. The altar. The altar
must die.
My guest is David Jay. He has a new album. It's called Missive to an Angel, From the Halls of Infamy and Allure. That track is called The Auteur. It's got an additional part to that title, hasn't it? With Rose McGowan, I should add, there, on doing the vocal parts at the end of it. What's the other part? Yeah. There's sort of a subtitle to that, isn't there? I think.
Yeah, it's The Starlet's Cut.
Oh, that's right, The Starlet's Cut,
It has a double meaning, you know, because it's from... You know, she was a starlet, and she lived that whole thing.
She did,
exploitation.
Yes.
And also, I mean, so it's like, you know, in a film, you get the director's cut. So this is the starlet's cut, but also the cut refers to a knife.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Also on that track is Sean Eden, a fantastic guitar player from the band Luna.
Right.
And Paul Wolfish plays keyboards with Swans. And... Larry Mullins, a.k.a. Toby Dammit from Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, is on drums. So it's a star lineup.
Yes. You've managed to get a lot of various people on this album. And again, I sort of want to go back to putting this together when you first had the idea to record this album. Was it a concept for you to begin with, or did it build as you went along?
It built as I went along. Yeah, which is often the case with these albums. Although the last couple I've done have been concept albums, really. But I didn't start out with the concept. I write the songs, and then I realise that is a concept.
Yes,
it becomes apparent. You know, it's self-revealing.
Yeah,
and I think it's good because it's sort of not forced, and it's a natural way of working.
Talking about working and working with different musicians and actresses and just the different people that have been involved in this album, for David Jay, just the work process for you, I just get the feeling, having talked to you before and just specifically listening to this album, that you really enjoy what you do. It's a treasure for you going into the studio and working with these different various people. Any thoughts about that, David?
It's absolutely that, yeah. And just the moments of writing the song, you know, which I usually write the lyrics first, nearly always write a lyric.
Yeah.
And then I just let that kind of gestate until I just spontaneously feel like, oh, now is the time to put that one to music. And it's usually very instant. I just pick up an acoustic guitar, light a candle, pour myself a little whiskey. And it flows, you know. But it really is an exalted state.
Yes.
It's such a turn on for
yes.
me.
Yes.
To be in that space of being inspired and feeling, it does feel like you are some sort of conduit for this inspiration. It's a mysterious process and it just flows through and out. And then, you know, you capture it these days on my iPhone. I do my little demo, which is great that I have that.
Yeah.
And that all the songwriters have this ability now just to, you know, turn on the phone and record wherever you are. And then finally, you know, go into the studio and work on it and bring in other musicians. And usually it's very obvious to me who the song is calling for.
Yes.
The song's cool for certain people. And I'm fortunate that I have, you know, such a body of cohorts, comrades, who I can call on. And they come in, you know, and record. And it's great also to be in different places, different countries, even as was the case with this album, and bring in the players who are resident in those places and record, you know, on the road, and put it all together at the end of the day, as it were.
So while we're talking about working with people, and as you say, you've got a treasure trove of acquaintances and friends, you're very well known, you've been around for a number of years, and that's a compliment, of course. Is there anyone that you, David J, haven't worked with, or maybe dead or alive, that you would love to have worked with or would still like to work with?
Yeah, Brian Eno.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've learned a lot from Eno at a distance. And I think if I was up close with him, I'd learn a hell of a lot more. I think we're similar in the way we think.
Yes.
We think outside the box, you know, and very much lateral creative thinkers. So, yeah, and he's just been a total inspiration for many, many years.
As a producer or as a musician, would you like to work with him or both?
Both,
yes. Okay.
Both,
yes.
Yeah.
Any vocalists that over the years that you've heard and you think to yourself, I would... Because I've been wondering, as I'm listening to this album, I'm wondering to myself whether you've thought about writing for other people over the years.
Yeah, there is one. Richard Hawley, my favourite vocalist. I did send him a song once. I think he was thinking about doing it, but he didn't do it. Do you know Richard Hawley?
Yes.
I mean, Scott Walker, you know, said that Richard Hawley is one of the all-time greats. So you don't get a higher praise than that. And he's certainly in the school of early Scott Walker. And Scott Walker is one of my all-time favorite singers. Just has that baritone, that sonorous, you know, rich, wonderful velvet voice.
Yes.
So I'd still, love to do something with Richard one day. I met him, it was funny because the first time I met him, which was years ago, he was playing in Hollywood. And I'd got his album, Cole's Corner, which I really loved. And I went down to see him. And I was backstage after they'd finished the gig and I was waiting for him to come out of his dressing room. And I felt a tap on my shoulder and I hear this thick northern brogue. I said, excuse me, are you David J from Bauhaus? He's from Sheffield.
Yes, right.
I said, Richard, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love you, man. I used to go and see you when I was 19. I was down the front.
Oh, that's great.
So, you know, it was great. So we had this instant connection and I met up with him a few times. He actually was going to come on stage with Bauhaus in 2005, 2006,
uh-huh.
when we were playing in London. But we got our schedules mixed up and we were playing two nights and he thought it was the other night, the second night.
Yeah.
But it was the first night, and so it didn't actually happen, which was a shame. But he was going to come on and do All We Ever Wanted Was Everything with us, which would have been fantastic. Maybe, I don't know, if we ever reform, we can.
I'm so glad that you mentioned Richard's name, because I think he's one of those talents that needs wider attention. I really do, and thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, great singer.
Again, this is another observation, listening to your album, I've always liked your music, and I love your songwriting. You just have, there's a certain something, which I really appreciate about what you do. Listening to what you do, I'm wondering how much you, David J, listen to other people's right now work, because I'm just feeling that just recently, in the last couple of years, the quality of singing and singer-songwriters just seems to, I don't know, maybe I'm just hearing a lot more, but it just seems to me there's a lot of great music out there these days.
Yeah, I agree with you. Not just singer-songwriters, and bands.
And bands, yeah.
You have to look for it. I mean, there's so much there. You really have to kind of sift through it all.
Right.
Or be just responsive and let it come to you, you know, which is, I tend to be like that.
Do you get people coming up to you at gigs or wherever you are when they can reach you? Do you have people that obviously are fans, but do you have aspiring young musicians, maybe not necessarily young even, that ask for your opinion, ask for your advice?
Yeah, I do. And of course, you know, with the internet and with Facebook, you know, that's much more possible now, you know. You are accessible, which is very much a double-edged thing.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, you have to apply a filter, get kind of inundated with things like that. And you know, there's very few things that really do connect with me. But if it genuinely does, then I connect with them. And sometimes I end up working with them.
Yeah.
You know,
I love that.
Producing them.
Yes,
whatever,
of course.
You know.
Yeah. Anybody you're working with right now? Anything that's coming up in the pipeline?
Yes, there's something really special. That's why I'm actually going to Prague tomorrow to produce an album by Mickey Greeny, who is from Birmingham, England.
Uh-huh.
And Mickey is an amazing songwriter, really one of the most talented I've ever heard. And he has an incredible voice. And how I discovered him was, I was playing in London a couple of years ago, and Pat Fish, a.k.a. the Jazz Butcher, was opening for me. And there's a parting shot at the end of the night. He said, he gave me a copy of Mickey's CD, and he said, oh, check this out. He's one of us. So Pat has always been one of my inspirations. He's got great taste in music, and he's turned me on to so many great things.
Right.
So I always, you know, I love it when he does this. So I took this home and I played it, and I was blown away by it.
Yes.
And so the next time I came back to London, I had, in addition to Pat playing with me, I invited Mickey to open up. And he was amazing that night. And then after the gig, we were all down in this basement in the underneath the venue, and Mickey picked up his guitar and he played songs that he hadn't played in the set. And he was just, the conversation in the room just stopped. And everybody was transfixed. He's so powerful. And I had another friend there with me, Mark Warren, the actor, who I've known for years and years. Mark was completely bowled over by Mickey's talent and said, you know, this guy's, we've got to capture lightning in a jar here, because this is just too good for it not to be out there. Because Mickey hadn't recorded for a long time. His story is, he was in a band in the early 90s, and he was courted by all these majors, but they wanted him to lead the band. It's that old story.
Yeah.
And they just wanted to sign him, you know, and he didn't want to do that. So he didn't do it. And then he became a bit of a recluse and disappeared for years and years, or carried on writing all the time. He had an extensive family. He's got lots of kids, and he did all that, you know, still does that. But he wanted to get back into performing and putting his music out there. So that is exactly what he's going to do. And we're bringing him over to Prague using the same studios and musicians that I used out there. And I'm going to produce the album. And Mark is very generously putting up some money for us to do this. So I'm very excited about this because he's phenomenal.
Talking about studios, I've got a quick question for you, and this is specifically for the train spotters that are listening out there. For you, David J, working in a studio, how important is it for you from going from one studio to another? I mean, I'm just wondering for you if there's not necessarily a familiar studio or a favorite studio, but just a studio setup. Anything that you particularly like with a studio?
Yeah, it has to be vibey, and you can create that to a degree, but it has to be, you know, inherently there in the studio. And I like studios that are kind of a bit funky and have a warmth to them and just feel lived in a bit. I don't like sterility. I don't like studios that are too modern and shiny. You can always light candles, that's good.
Right.
It's very important to set the vibe right. And I'm very sensitive to that. So really the first day for me, or the first half of the first day, is just, if it's not there already, just getting all that dialed in, you know. Putting up some drapes and, lighting candles.
Yeah, getting the atmosphere, yeah. Have you ever worked at Olympic Studios in Barnes in London?
I haven't.
Yeah, I mean, where the Stones did a lot of great, great stuff. A lot of other people did, of course. I just wondered about that. I could see you in
Never
there.
Never been there.
I could see you there, David. It's one of those studios I think you'd fit right in. There's something else I want to ask you about, because you sort of kind of touched on this, talking about the fella you're going to be recording in Prague. And that's the business. And I don't want to go into this too long, but I'm just curious to know for you, because over the years you've made a lot of recordings, you started off, you never expected to get to where you are these days. It's been a huge success. Lots of things have gone on for you. There's been the ups and the downs. But the business, the whole music business along the way, has it changed dramatically for you, or has it always just been the biz?
Oh, no, it's completely different.
Yeah.
And there's pros and cons, you know. Pros being how it is now. You are much more independent.
Yes.
As an artist, you know, and you have more, you have concrete artistic control. There's no compromise whatsoever in that area. It's hard because there's no funding from a label, as in the old days. You know, you get an advance and you wouldn't pay a penny for the studio, not initially. You pay for it in the end, because it's recoupable.
Yes.
And you pay a lot, you know, at the end of the day. But it's all like about downsizing now and streamlining and using like crowdsourcing, which is, I think, a beautiful thing, because it involves the audience directly, and they become part of the whole process, and they feel it's familial, and they feel this very close connection. And I think that's a very beautiful thing. And, you know, I'm fortunate in that I have some great supporters, you know, and the last few albums have been made through those resources.
Yes.
Including this new one. And I think that's great. You know, it's a nicer way of doing it than the old hard, you know, business way in the past with the labels, and it's sort of like quite often combative.
Yes. You know? Yes.
The artist v the label and all that. But it's just, there's not so much money around, but that in and of itself is not a bad thing. It can in fact be a good thing. And I think when you are limited financially, I think you stretch as far as your imagination goes and you can become more creative. I think sometimes when artists have a lot of money thrown at them, it can ruin them.
I think you're right. It's,
you know, they don't have to, like, they're not hungry, and they get lazy.
Yes.
and rest on their laurels, you know. So yeah, it's interesting the way things have gone.
It makes me always...
I prefer it really how it is now.
Yeah,
although you have to fight a bit harder to get your work out there. I just like, I like the tone of it.
Yes. Missive to an Angel from the Halls of Infamy and Allure is the new album coming out in just a couple of days from David J. I'm going to turn it over to you now, David, for you to select one more cut that we can play, and then I think we're probably going to be out of time here. What do you think? What can we play?
Okay. Why don't you play the title track?
What a good idea.
Which was recorded in Prague, and the rain that you hear on the track, that happened in real time. We just recorded the track, and it just sheeted down with rain in there's this stone courtyard, and it was a beautiful sound. I love this, one of my favorite sounds, rain.
Yes.
So I recorded it on my phone, and just we took it into the studio and said, okay, let's mix this in with this track, and it worked so well.
Okay, I'm going to play that as we lead out of the interview. Before we go, I just want to let you know it is always an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Really enjoy what you have to say. Come back on at any time. Anytime you've got something to talk about, David, just give me a buzz and we'll get you back on. I really think this album is absolutely fantastic. I want everybody to hear it.
Thank you.
Enjoy yourself on your tour, and safe journey over to Europe tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you.
David J, everybody, thank you so much for joining us at Life Elsewhere, David. All the best, man.
All right, cheers. Bye now.
Thank you, David. That was absolutely incredible. Thank you so much indeed. Safe journey to you.
You're welcome.
Talk to you
soon. Thank you so much.
On the bedpost is a nail through your flesh and the cross, and I'm the author of your martyrdom. His conquest is your loss, and I hate the dumb one in me, but I can't keep that bastard down. He will shower whores with petals while you wear that thorny crown. It's true you are an angel, selfless to a fault. While I lean towards the vino, seducing recruits to my cult, I would never hurt you willingly. But libido runs wild, and I have lost the wherewithal to rein in that unruly child. And it's so hard for you, hard for you. True, it is so hard. A dime store Casanova with one foot in the grave and the other in the boudoir where the mistress meets the slave. Lustful and piratical, I take what I fancy as mine. Climb shackles on ankles of damsels and drown them with roses and wine. so hard for you, hard for you, you who are true, it is so hard. Yes, it's so hard for you, you who are so true, hard for you.
A Life Elsewhere exclusive, the first time that cut has been played publicly anywhere. The title track from the new double album by David J, Missive to an Angel from the Halls of Infamy and Allure. A big thank you to David for our very special conversation. And yes, a big thank you to you for listening. Don't forget that Life Elsewhere can be heard at our affiliate stations, WNRM, The Root, NWCZ out of the Pacific Northwest, IRN Broadcast, and Cornucopia out of the UK, and of course over at NPR One, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from, and Mixcloud. Plus, the show is always up at lifeelsewhere.co, along with Life Elsewhere music. And I'd like you to go to our sites to make sure you find out what's going on. Subscribe so you can keep informed all the time. And let me know what you think by sending me an email. In a moment, the nice lady will give you my email address. Until next time, be well, be good, and always, it costs absolutely nothing, be nice.
You have been listening to Life Elsewhere, created and hosted by Norman B. Life Elsewhere is written and produced by Norman B. Guest booking and additional research by Stephanie Lane. Behind the scenes assistance by James Van, Bruce Goodman, and Allison Klein. We love to hear what you think about Life Elsewhere. Send your questions, queries, and comments to info@lifeelsewhere.co. That's C-O. Life Elsewhere is produced at the studios of WMNF Tampa.